Hey, welcome back to Keepin' Cozy. Today I'm speaking with Danielle and Miriam. They're two really baller, up-and-coming science researchers who've created their own company. We talk a little bit about the immigrant experience, how they became Forbes 30 Under 30 in the world of science and chemistry, and a little bit about the world of competition culture, which has come into pretty big prominence because of the Time Kid of the Year Award and all these other things related to science competitions. Are they really that good for us? Well, you'll find out throughout the course of this conversation, which I hope you enjoy, and if you do, please be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Thank you. Do you guys mind introducing yourselves?
Of course. My name is Daniela Blanco. I am originally from Venezuela. I am a chemical engineer. I came to the U.S. Almost 4 years ago to do a PhD in chemical engineering, and now I am the co-founder and CTO of Synthetics.
And I'm Miriam Spady. I'm also a chemical engineer by training. I got my bachelor's from NYU back in 2018. And the past 3 years, I've essentially been focusing my energy on developing the business model and business strategy for Synthetics, anywhere from, you know, trying to get customers excited and on board to figuring out pricing. I was born in New York, but I grew up in France, and I actually came back to New York for college, and I'm currently the CEO of Synthetics.
Awesome. Do you guys, so I got in touch with Daniela because of the Lemelson Award at MIT. Do you mind talking a little bit about how you won that award? I know just by like looking it up, some really impressive people have won it. Like the guy who invented the Segway, as well as Ray Kurzweil, who's a futurist at Google now.
Yes. It is an award between like the Lemelson Foundation and MIT, and it goes to students who are inventors. I was in the graduate student category, and it was an incredible cohort, lots of incredible inventions. It is an application that is truly exciting because it asks you a lot about how you come up with new inventions, how the school has been helping you develop all of these things, and how you're planning to really take this to the next level. You know, it's not just developing something in the lab, but making sure that it becomes a commercially viable product and something that is really gonna make a difference. So it was very challenging maybe to like complete all of the application, but it was very rewarding, and I have loved to be part of the entire, you know, like competition and award ceremony and just being in touch with everyone. It's a wonderful network.
Yeah. And I'm sure, I mean, it's one of those things, like I looked online and everyone who's won it now has a Wikipedia page. So, I mean, that's a really promising note to have won it, you know?
Definitely a goal. We'll have Daniela's Wikipedia page up soon.
You know, that, I mean, it's funny, but it's like one of the main things. Like we had this this guy named Mahbod Mogadam, who created a company called Rap Genius. So I don't know if you guys use Spotify, but it's like the lyric, you know, decoding site. Yeah. But you know, his whole entire second company is an alternative to Wikipedia called Everpedia, and the whole entire thing is the whole premise is anyone can have a Wikipedia. And there is a huge like culture behind trying to get it. And, you know, I mean, it's a lot of these young, you know, entrepreneurial people such as yourselves are able to land the coveted Wikipedia page a lot long before, you know, some of the older people who are, you know, doing other crazy things. So congratulations.
Thank you. Well, I mean, it's honestly all thanks to like the incredible support that we get from these amazing organizations.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you guys mind talking a little bit about, you know, just being a student entrepreneur and what it was like managing between, you know, schoolwork as well as being an entrepreneur and starting Synthetics?
I'll let Miriam start.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. So I was a senior undergraduate when we started Synthetics. There's a lot to think about being a student. I think one of the things that we were really, really fortunate to have is you have a lot of opportunities for exposure. So neither Daniela nor I had any kind of entrepreneurial or business knowledge or experience whatsoever. But you know, being a student, especially in a lot of I would say US colleges specifically, there is a lot of options to work with different departments, work with different professors sometimes. And for example, for us at NYU, we had the NYU Leslie E-Lab, which essentially was for everything entrepreneurial set. And they had a lot of programs, a lot of startup school courses and other things that you could take in order to advance your knowledge of entrepreneurship. So yeah, so there's Ayala, Daniela add in some stuff as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Miriam's completely right. Like all of those things were super helpful. I think that at least like for me, it was very challenging to handle everything at the same time. You know, like it was like the PhD, that's already a lot of work on its own. Then, you know, having to work in all the deliverables for the company, and then, you know, still trying to sleep and have some sort of social life. So there was a lot going on, but I think that something that made it possible for me was that it was something that I really enjoyed, you know, not just because Miriam was my friend even before we started all of this with synthetics. So it was like, you know, good time that we spent together. We would work on it together. She is the most competent person I know. So, you know, it's just a great team. And then you can bounce off kind of like responsibilities and the things that we're doing. And I think that's the only way that I was really able to push through that. I think that, you know, like it's a lot to do, but as long as like you're really enjoying it and you have a great team, you can push
through. Yeah. Do you guys mind
the lady who got the level surprise, but I appreciate it.
Do you guys mind going a little bit more into detail as to what Synthetics does and, you know, how it's a business and how it's, you know, revolutionizing chemistry or, you know, nylon?
Yeah. So to give you a quick overview of what we do at Synthetics, essentially we're accelerating innovation in the chemical industry all throughout a lot of different sectors. The way that we're able to do that is we develop tools that help process chemists accelerate their development process for developing new types of molecules. So that can be anything from nylon to pharma to specialty chemicals. We specifically use machine learning to leverage small data in order to generate insights that are equivalent to thousands of points. And we help those process chemists reduce their timeline by up to 75%. The way that we got there is a really long story. And I think Daniela will tell you a little bit about all the different iterations we went through before getting to this end product.
Yeah. So actually, you know, when I came to the US, I was going to do my PhD in chemical engineering, and I wanted to do it on chemical processes that would help integrate renewable energy sources. So that is how originally Synthetics was supposed to commercialize the technology that I was developing, which was solar powered nylon. And that's why we were called Synthetics, you know, from the sun and then synthetic chemicals. However, as we kept working on it, we realized that nylon is one thing. We wanted to grow to more sectors of the chemical industry. And then we saw the real pain that the industry has right now, which is just the process to implement a new, cleaner and more sustainable chemical process. And that is how we moved away a little bit from like just doing solar powered and instead developing tools that could help you implement different processes that can be powered with renewable energy sources. And we do that through the use of machine learning. So that's how I got into the intersection between chemical engineering and machine learning. And that's how we started developing this technology that we are actually commercializing now, not just for nylon, but for different sectors of the chemical industry.
When did you guys want to do it as a business?
When did we want to do it as a business?
Yeah. When did you realize it had like full commercial viability from, you know, right before?
Well, I think Daniela, I mean, Daniela will tell you, I think from the very start, like when it started getting, I think she'll talk about like the H&M Foundation and, you know, it started getting a little bit of traction. I think early on was something that had a lot of potential. But I'll tell you about me and when I got into it as well. Is I was a senior and I wanted to do something that has some kind of impact. Both of us, we're essentially motivated by the vision of having a more sustainable chemical industry. Something that we like to talk about a lot is the chemical industry is the third largest emitter of CO2. There's a huge potential for impact to lower the greenhouse gas emissions, but also lower the energy consumption and so much more for that industry. And so I wanted it to have an impact. And I think, you know, I joined the team because Daniela was working on this awesome technology and I wanted to be a part of what was going to happen to it. And it became real. I think we talk about this every once in a while, but it really became real when we got our first amount of funding. So we entered the entrepreneurship challenge with NYU, and it was a 100K prize that we ended up getting like that May that I was graduating. And so that made it real. And at that point it was like, all right, like now it's not just like the idea of commercializing it. We're going to go out and actually do this.
Yeah. And was it a tough decision to leave the traditional, like, you know, career path, especially you know, I think immigrants in general have like a pretty strong desire to like do what's safe. So this is obviously a very unsafe, you know, decision, especially if you have a promising background.
Well, if you ask anyone who knows me, they'll tell you that I'm probably the most risk-averse person they know. So yes, it was very hard for me. But I think it's just, it is risky to be on the journey of entrepreneurship, but at the same time, it's so rewarding. You know, I feel like it's beyond, I'm beyond grateful to know that I get to work every day on something that I love, on something that I have the freedom to, you know, like keep moving from one place to another and really develop the things that I believe in. And I think that there's also room to learn so much. You know, I love and I admire all of the big companies, and I think it's great how everything is set up. And then, you know, like you grow in there and there's always someone who's teaching you how to do it and everything is set up. But I think it is so exciting when you're an entrepreneur and then there is no clear path. So you just have to, you know, make it as you go, and you have to build it when nobody has done it before, and you have to figure out how to do everything on your own. It can get exhausting sometimes. But honestly, I find it very rewarding, and I think it's one of the most enriching experiences that I have been through.
Yeah, I think we were, we had this conversation as well, but we were talking, I mean, when I graduated and I gave a speech that was talking about how essentially when you're a student, it's the best time to start looking into entrepreneurship, because there's a lot of risk obviously going into entrepreneurship, but it's so much harder to take that step when you've already started getting, you know, a nice big company salary, for example, or you're already started to start payments on your car, and maybe you have a family that, you know, is relying on your salary. And so in a lot of ways, being a student gives you a little bit more tolerance for risk at that stage, and being able to do that. But that being said, there was a really cool SHEP conference where we talked about the concept of a reverse friends and family. So a lot of times, you know, when you're investing, you talk about getting some money from friends and family. And, you know, I think both Danielle and I will tell you that that's not necessarily something that everyone can do. And sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes it's reverse friends and family, where you have to also be able to support, you know, family members, or be able to support, you know, more of your family as well. But, you know, and that concept makes it really difficult for a lot of people to get into entrepreneurship. And I think, you know, for us, it's not something that we overlooked at all. It's something that was really important, where we said, all right, you know, this is such a great idea and we want to bring it to market and we want to make it what we can, but we need to be able to have a salary throughout it. And we need to be able to, you know, hold up our end of things. And that's something that doesn't get talked about enough in the entrepreneurship world, because a lot of times people who end up doing entrepreneurship have the means to not get paid and to, you know, put in their own money into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually just saw that, I think, Daniela, you won the Forbes 30 Under 30 chemistry or some kind of science award. And one of the things that I saw that happened with that specific award is a lot of people have been giving it some backlash, because a lot of the kids who win it are literally like trust fund kids who create like startups or whatever. And they're, you know, they're very talented, but they have all the privilege in the world. So for them to win it, it's not as, you know, drastic as someone who has exactly what you were saying, where it's reverse friends and family.
Yeah, no, we both won it. We both got into the Forbes 30 Under 30. It's on the energy category.
My apologies, Miriam.
No worries.
But yeah, but I mean, you are, you know, you're completely right. Like, to us, it means a lot, because it is something that we have truly built, you know, from scratch, and that we have done it really like with our sweat and sacrifice and taking the risk and always making sure that we can, you know, build something that is stable enough to actually keep us going. Because we, as Miriam said, like, we both need the salary. We both need to really make this work.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, another value of being a student entrepreneur is you guys met, you know, through NYU, which is obviously one of the big value adds of going to college, is meeting, you know, other young, talented people.
Yeah, absolutely. And also having more people willing to talk to you and more people willing to try things because you're a student.
Yeah. 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 So I think I kind of want to go a little bit more into this immigrant experience that you guys had. I know that Daniela, you came from Venezuela, but with Miriam, you said that you were born here, but you grew up in France. Do you guys mind talking a little bit more about your immigrant experience?
Yes. So yeah, I grew up in Venezuela. I came here in 2017. As you know, Venezuela is going through a lot, like a very, very, very complex political and economic situation. So you know, it's of course very tricky, because it's one thing to leave your country just because you want to leave the country because of an opportunity. It's another one to leave it also like with your heart, you know, in a million pieces, because you know that you're leaving such a mess back home, and that there's so many people that you still love and that they're there. You know, it's hard to go back. It's hard to go visit. So building a new life here, starting from scratch, I think always has that component of like where you get nostalgic and, you know, you miss home and you know that you can't go enough. So I won't lie to you. I won't say that it was super easy. But I think that what really kept me going was that I was here to do something that I truly loved, which was the PhD. And then it is also something that kept me very busy. So it gives you less time to just be sad or nostalgic. But I think that as time went along, I just kept getting more friends and feeling like I was starting to build a family here, and to truly feel like my life and my new home was here. I think that one of the most probably like touching experiences that I had was that I was part of the Global Student Entrepreneur Awards. I actually got to represent the US, and you have no idea of how much that meant to me, because it was, you know, like to have the responsibility to carry the name of a country that was my second home, you know, and that finally made me feel like I belong here and I can do something back and I can represent you and I can show you how grateful I am for opening your doors to me. That was actually super, super meaningful to me. So I think that when you're an immigrant, sometimes I feel like a lot of it really helps you as an entrepreneur, because, you know, as an immigrant, again, you build a life, you build a new life, you build everything. And in entrepreneurship, you do the same. You build a business from scratch and you can't be afraid of what's happening. You can't be afraid of the blank page. You have to instead see it as an opportunity to build something great.
Yeah, and I think what Daniela won't say as well is that, you know, sure, she is risk averse at some point, but at the same time, she also isn't, just because it's tough, you know, to come in and not be a US citizen, not know if you're going to be able to work for the company, you know, once you graduate, because then you're not on a student visa anymore and you have to worry about those other visa issues. And there's a lot that goes there, and you know, and it's, you have to be really brave in order to actually decide to go forward with that. That was something that was a challenge for us, is trying to figure out how we're going to start this company with people who aren't US citizens and people who have to figure out, you know, how can we pay them and how can we make this work. I personally didn't have that issue. I was born in the US, so I actually kind of was able to go around that pretty easily. But it's been really interesting to watch it and see how much of a challenge it can be, but how, you know, like Danielle has been able to get over it and be able to move forward and move the company forward regardless.
It's because I have her support. You should see. Now, Miriam is an expert on immigration law.
This point.
My own limitations.
If it's all right, I'd love to transition to the culture of these big prizes. Like something that's always kind of been really fascinating for me, because I kind of participated in it when I was in high school, was these like major competitions. Like in the high school level, I don't know if either of you guys would be familiar with American high school competitions, like the Intel STS or I think it's Regernon now, but there's a huge culture behind science research at a very young age. And just very recently, Time Magazine named a 15-year-old girl the kid of the year for her science contributions. And I think, you know, obviously that's super noble and it's awesome that more women are going into science such as yourselves. But I do wonder what the adverse effects are of, you know, going into science at such a young age and being in such a competitive landscape, because, you know, getting into these kinds of top institutions like NYU is getting harder and harder. And in order to get there, you have to be competing against people who may be winning Time Kid of the Year. So what would you guys, how would you guys react to that?
So I think, you know, like that's really interesting. So I think, you know, on the one hand, exposure and validation is really important. It's really important, especially if you're doing a lot of work, if you're keeping your head down and doing kind of putting all that effort in. It is always rewarding to have someone look at that effort that you put in and say, hey, this is really awesome. This is something that we want to recognize and talk about. And I think that that's a really big step. where there might be some downfalls is that sometimes, you know, it's really easy to get caught up in that world and just continue to, you know, reach for more awards and reach for more things. And then all of a sudden you're not working to advance the project that you're working on, but you're working to kind of fit within those awards and those types of prizes. And so it is definitely a downfall from that. And it's always a challenge to, you know, always stay humble and keep on working and just see that prize as something that is recognition for what you've done, and give you the motivation and you know, the push to continue doing what you're doing, and like work towards newer heights. I do have to say the things that we've won and the recognition that we've got have got us to where we are. And that's something that we're very, very much thankful for in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I'll say that I totally echo what Miriam said. You know, without the competitions, we would really not be here because that's how we got funded and that's how we have gotten a lot of support. Even like, you know, a lot of these competitions, you grow as you prepare for it. You know, like you have the motivation to really deliver more, to prepare a better presentation, to get better at what you're doing so that you can win. So I think it was a very, very good motivation for us. Regarding the adverse effects, I guess, I would just say that I love competitions as long as they don't get to us, meaning healthy competition, I think, is incredible. But, you know, we have to always remember that we have to stay honest. We have to stay true to who we are. And it's not, you know, do everything just to win. No, we are who we are and we present it. And if that gets us to winning, amazing. If not, I'm sure there's a lot that we will learn from it. And I just think that as long as everyone remembers that, then we're in a good track. I think that we have truly enjoyed it every single time we have won, but we have also, you know, learned a lot every single time we have lost. And then we just use that as motivation for our next competition and our next just like challenge.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And I don't think we see other people in those competitions as like competition per se, you know, like in the end, we're all trying to make the world a better place in some way or other. And it's just like, you know, there's no competition there. As much of these need to be installed as possible.
So you guys are very pro competition culture?
Like, or, how do you define competition culture?
Well, I guess so. I guess I'm just trying to react to what you guys said. So you're in favor of the competition because it provides very positive reactions and can help create new opportunities. But the culture itself, do you think is, it's good if you don't let it become toxic?
Yeah, absolutely. It's good if you don't let it become toxic. And it's also, I think, you know, just because the word competition is used doesn't mean that we're up against each other, I think is what we're trying to talk about. You know, it's like in the end, like even, you know, the second prize, the third prize, the last prize, all of these people are still working on a project that's going to make a difference in the world. And it's just, these are just ways where like right now, this project, we see a lot of potential in it. So we're going to put some money into it, or we're going to put a prize into it. But it doesn't lower the value of any of the other projects. And so, you know, it really depends how you look at competition culture. Like, I don't think that, you know, putting people up against each other and saying one is better than the other is something that's good. But, you know, being able to push the people forward that need to be pushed while also giving everyone a chance for exposure is always a positive thing.
Yeah, I would say too that I love competitions, but I think it's also because like my mom always told me, like, you know, like a competition is truly just a competition with yourself. You know, like you don't need to worry about what the other ones are doing. You know, like it's as long as you do your best and like you improve yourself and, you know, like you like beat that last version of you, because now for this competition, you became so much better in all of these things, then you won. And that's what matters. And, you know, that's why I was saying, like, as long as you stay true to yourself, as long as like you set a goal and you're like, hey, you know, if this is a pitch competition, I'm going to make a pitch that's 30 times better than the one that I currently have. That to me is a true competition. It's, you know, it's like us against us and our previous pitch until we get something better. And every time we come out of a competition where I feel like we have grown, we won. Doesn't matter if we get the check or not. We have already won.
Well, what's it like losing a competition then, especially one that you've tried really hard to win?
I think it's precisely, you know, it's that we always look at each other and we're like, well, we did do our best. and I feel like we tell each other kind of like, you know, it's great that throughout this competition, we were able to figure out this and this and this, and look at all these things we learned, look at how great this person did and how much we would love to do this in the same way that they did. And we have always taken positive things out of it. Of course, you know, like it would have probably been even a little bit happier if we had won, but I don't think we have ever walked away from a competition, you know, like being mad or sad. It always feels like we did our best and we learned.
Honestly, there have been times, and we'll kind of compare competition to, like, you know, getting feedback, right? There have been times where we've been disappointed to get positive feedback because we're like, we need to know, like, there's always something we can learn. Like, we need to know what we're doing not good so that we can actually improve on that. And I think every time we've lost a competition, it's been a huge learning. It's like, all right, you know, we lost a competition. Where are the things where we can go better? What can we do better? What can we, you know, look more into or talk more about to make our odds better for next time? And even just to make our business better, period.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome. But do you think, I guess just to close it out, how do you think about these very high publicity awards, like Time Person of the Year and things like that? I know that that's, you know, a little bit different than winning like the Lemelson Award, but do you think that there's a quote in the Tao Te Ching that says, whenever you esteem something as being great, others become non-virtuous or non-great? Could you guys react to that quote in the context of prize-winning competitions?
I mean, I think Daniela said it really well, right? Like, it's that concept of, like, just because one thing is great, that does not make anything else not great. Like, that's just not necessarily true.
And is that something that most competitors, you think, feel? Or do you think that there are a lot of people in competition culture who, like, have their blinders on and want to win?
You're always going to find people like that. You're always going to find people like that. But I think we've been pretty lucky in terms of we've worked with a lot of people. You know, the work that we're doing is it has to do with sustainability. It has to do with, you know, trying to change an industry for the better. And so when you work in that type of industry, it's really hard to see things that way because there's so much more that we can do as like a people to make our world and our planet more sustainable, that there's not a competition of which one's the best one. It's just like, how many of these can we get to market as fast as possible?
Well, you know, final question. What do you guys think of the word accomplished and what does it mean to you?
Yeah. I'll go. It's always hard on these types of calls to see who is going to go first. But, you know, okay, so I think, you know, for me, accomplished means when you've achieved something, you've been successful, you've achieved something. And I think it's more of a feeling. I think it's hard to describe in terms of like, it's not because I did this that I feel accomplished. It's usually something happened and now I'm like, okay, I feel really accomplished. I have to say that for me personally, I think that happened once where I was like, oh, I feel really accomplished. And it was at the end of my undergraduate career. Like I graduated. I was actually the valedictorian. And we also just got like these two competitions that we've just won, like 120K. And it was really crazy. I was also writing a thesis at the time. And it was just like so many things happening in that last month or like 2 or 3 months before I graduated college, which was also a big deal because graduating college for my family was very huge. And it was just all these things that happened and came to a crux altogether. And it was like a denouement. And you essentially just were like, whew, okay, I kind of can say I feel accomplished right now. And like, that was a moment that I very clearly remember feeling that. But I think I have to say that just in general for me, you know, it's something that lasts maybe a day at most, you know, like probably more like 5 minutes. And then it's kind of like on to the next thing, you know? And I think for me, accomplished is just when you reach a time where like all the things that you've worked towards kind of come to some kind of, you know, crux. And then you have that accomplished feeling and then you kind of continue on working towards your next, you know, goal. So I don't know if that made too much sense, but I think that's how I would define accomplished.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so we had this guy, General David Petraeus, who is the former director of the CIA. He was on our podcast and he was talking about how for him, the word accomplished or what it means to be successful is actually a form of anxiety because he said that a lot of people who are successful, they almost live in a trap of the past that you kind of alluded to where you just said that you win it and then the next day you move on. But a lot of people, when especially the bigger, you know, the bigger the wins are, the harder it is to move on or to replicate that success. Could you guys react to General David Petraeus's words?
So, okay, like at least on my side, you know, I'm going to start because I agree with a lot of what he says. The thing is that what I feel is that my notion of what accomplished is has changed. you know, I used to feel just like every time I would do something small, I'm the kind of person who celebrates it, you know, like the smallest, tiniest thing. I'm like, yes, like the reactor stopped leaking, you know, like you have no idea how many stupid things I have celebrated. So I, you know, like I feel accomplished with the smallest things. And then I always have something in my head as in like, okay, you know, like this is not where we're stopping. So that's when I identify with that quote that you just mentioned. It's like, you know, like now we did this, so now I want to do it, you know, like better. Now I want to do it larger. Now I want it to do like even more than it's already doing. So you win an award, you want another one, you know, and things like that. And because you want to keep growing and you want to keep doing more. So there's always something else. I'm happy, but you know, you're always looking at something else that you want to accomplish. But I think that lately, I don't know if it was exactly, I think it might have been like during the pandemic, you know, with so many things going on, I feel like I changed the way that I thought about it. And for me now, accomplished just means that I'm happy with who I am and what I'm doing to improve myself. I don't think that has to do with an award, with, you know, something on the technical world, even with like the startup on its own or anything like that. I think it has to do just with every day I feel like I learned something. I changed my mindset regarding, you know, something that I didn't think was possible, or I learned something new. Or, you know, even if I face a challenge, like just being able to adapt to it and to learn, you know, what I was doing wrong and then trying to change that, I feel like now that's feeling accomplished. I think that those little things are the ones that take me to build a new, bigger accomplishment. But I think that that's the way that at least makes me happy to think about it now, to think about those little things. And again, I don't think it has to do with an award or anything similar. I think it just has to do with how I feel with myself.
Yeah. Sorry.
No. Continue. Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, I was just going to say, yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I think for me, accomplished is still probably, I mean, maybe in like 2 or 3 years, ask me again and I'll be like, I'll say something similar. I think for me, accomplished is still very much tied to a little bit more physical things. But I will say that like one of the things that I realized is that, you know, like you just realize that life is in ups and downs, and you just go up and down like a friggin' sine curve essentially for like most of your life, and you just, it's just really cool to be able to understand that and recognize that. And so you'll have every once in a while and you're those ups and things are going amazing and so many things are happening, and then you'll just know that like at some point, you know, that's not going to last forever and you're going to go back down, and then that down is when you do most of your learnings and you get so much, you know, out of it, and then you go back up again and then you get another kind of thing that happens. And it's kind of just like understanding that process and makes it really easy to deal with, because you know that no matter where you are, you know where those next steps are going to be.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for coming on the podcast, and I look forward to sharing this with everyone.